It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. There's a little confusion in the Windows Insider program. We'll talk about that. Did I just say Windows? I think I did. Farewell to Internet Explorer after 27 years, and a summary of all the big gaming announcements coming from Microsoft. This is E3 week, and Paul Thurrott's on it. Actually, Mary Jo's on it. Next on Windows Weekly. It's true.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 781, recorded Wednesday, June 15th, 2022. The Balloon Store. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Intel, orchestrated by the experts at CDW, to deliver multi-layer security and remote manageability with the Intel vPro platform powered by 12th generation Intel Core processors. Learn more at cdw.com/Intel Client. And by Trade Coffee. Right now, Trade is offering new subscribers a total of $30 off your first order, plus free shipping when you go to drinktrade.com/windows. That's more than 40 cups of coffee free. Get started by taking their quiz and let Trade find you a coffee you'll love. And by Collide. Get endpoint management that puts the user first. Visit collide.com/ww to learn more and activate a free 14-day trial today. No credit card required. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft with these lovely people here. Mary Jo Foley, all about Microsoft.com, our ZDNet blog, and of course, Paul Thurrott from Thurrott.com. Do not blame them for the new album art. That's not their fault. It's mine. Disclaimer. Yes.
Do we have to start fighting now? I usually get along with Mary Jo really well.
No, we're going to fight on today's show.
It was to imply that there is a
tug of war.
That is
a back and forth of ideas.
It was a more dynamic show than it actually is what we're trying to.
It's more of a slump in a couch and drink a beer kind of a show.
It's a love fest.
We're the dynamic duo of Windows guys.
That's true. That's a very good point.
Oh boy, so
he's
much to
Robin
to.
Though. He's Robin,
and you're Batman. Okay.
That's fine as long as I'm a little bit rock and roll and you're a little bit country.
No.
I'm going to call them Donnie and Marie.
No.
Well, initially when we were first discussing the album art, we went through a lot of, different ideas for it.
How do we de-bland these two idiots?
Well, this was one of This was one
I'm
idea.
Sure it was.
I don't know if this would have worked because it's kind of more animated, but I feel like
we've definitely done that.
Slap fight.
We have.
Slap fight. We're redoing all our album art. The way it works with this design team at Clutch, they're good. They say, okay, words. Just say words about the show. Tell us about the show. So it's Paul. It's Mary Jo. She has a gong. He rants. Maybe I portrayed it as more dynamic than it really
sounds
is.
Sounds like a Sunday night animation show on Fox.
It does. I haven't used the gong in a long time.
No, it's true. Me. So maybe we're trying to encourage you. I don't know.
See how it goes today, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Willie, Paul, I did notice at the top of our notes a little angry emoji. Bright red.
But what's interesting about the anger is that this comes from Mary Jo.
Oh!
It does.
All right. Yep. So, let's start with the Windows Insider program.
That's God, where our anger so is much. Coming from.
This is where the anger begins. Okay.
So, where to even begin on this topic? This week, Microsoft, kind of out of the blue, came out with a new beta build of Windows 11. And in it, it had the tabbed File Explorer. So the reason this is for some people, right? A subset of insiders. The reason this is troubling is it was provided to people who thought they had the RTM final bits, right? Like this is the 22H2 final bits group.
Yep. Mary Jo,
who
why would anyone
this?
Think such a thing? Microsoft never says that.
They said it. They said it, right? Didn't they say?
They like, did. They literally said it in the public forum. Yep. This is 22H2.
Right.
And they put it in the release preview.
And they asked, well, they haven't put the tabbed File Explorer in the release preview.
No.
Yet,
I mean,
right?
But they put the builder there. I mean, listen, we have to look for signs in the sky, like we're looking
like
for omens or something. But all of those signs pointed to the same thing. And like I said, they did, in fact, say publicly, this is the final build of 22H2.
They did. And also started soliciting corporations to test it because they said, this is 22H2. Like, you should start testing this now. And then suddenly Tab File Explorer shows up in the beta channel. It has not yet shown up in release preview, but I'm assuming it will, given what's happening, which implies that it's going to be in 22H2, right?
The thing is, Mary Jo, we should at least admit that they tested this feature for months and months. They got all kinds of feedback on it. They know it's reliable. Oh, wait. It debuted 3 days earlier.
Right.
4 days. It was four days earlier.
Okay.
This is an unprecedented, even given what I see as ineptness in the Windows Insider program, this is an unprecedented event. You know, we know they're going to fix bugs, you know, and we know, we've talked about this all the time. They're going to add features. You know, we know this, but. Right.
So the reason we're bringing this up as our top story today and want to talk about this is we feel like we understood the rules for the Insider program as they've changed over time, but we felt like we had a pretty good understanding of how this worked until this week, where I'm like, okay, somebody said to me, do you think this is weird? I said, I thought I understood how Insider builds work till this week, and I do not understand it anymore. I would say
it's slightly different. Like I've come to an uncomfortable middle ground with how the Insider program works because I don't understand how it works. I don't remember if I saw this or said this last week, but I would call the dev channel the experimental channel.
Yes,
because it's about experimenting, right?
Agree.
And that's fine. I guess it's not the way rings or channels were ever before until about a year ago, whatever they did this. But okay, fine. It's not tied to a particular Windows version. Okay, cool. But really, beta and release channel are not, release preview channel, are not tied to a specific Windows version anymore either. They just never really said that. The beta channel is for features that are a little closer to release, and I guess release preview is for stuff that's even a little bit closer than that to release. Like, you used to be able to say release preview channel was for the currently shipping version of Windows, and that you're going to test updates before they appear in Windows Update on a Patch Tuesday or whatever, and you're going to test app updates before they go live for everyone else. And like, okay, cool. That's a that's a real conservative way to test Windows. For some people, that might be exactly what they're looking for. But now, it's not really it's not that at all right now because the release preview has the next version of Windows 11. It's not on the current version anymore. So the rationale or the description of each of these things is so vague.
Yeah.
That I think they would argue to us, if they ever said anything clearly, that this is why we can do things like we're doing right now, because we never did say this is a specific version of Windows. So who cares what you think about this or whatever.
So my understanding up until this week was Dev Channel was experimental. There were no promises that if a feature was in Dev Channel, it would ever ship. It might not ever ship. You can't call them on something getting pulled, right? Beta was supposed to be closer to a representation of the next version of Windows, the next feature update of Windows. Not 100%, like there's still a chance something could change, but release preview was supposed to be, if it's in release preview, this is the next feature update to Windows. So now, if this feature, Tab File Explorer, moves into release preview, it's going to throw off this whole way of people thinking about the rings, I feel like. And
it's a fairly major change. I think that's why.
It is a very major change. Yes, it is.
Here's I think I feel like I just did this last week. Let me briefly defend Microsoft because
See, this is why we're doing the tug of war, because I'm not defending them at all on this.
Well, I was
prescient. I realize.
This is a devil's advocate kind of a thing. So, look, I don't agree with it.
He can't even do it. He can't do it.
I know. But, well, The communication part of it is indefensible. They're not communicating. Yeah. They're not communicating at all, let alone clearly. It's that I find to be reprehensible as always. However, I guess it's okay for Microsoft. Like, in other words, let's say Microsoft finalizes some version of Windows 11. You know, 22 issues. It's final. This is the thing, and it's going through some trajectory where it comes out and everyone gets it. In between that and the final release, if they updated the Media Player app. Or the, I'm trying to think of something.
Notepad.
What are their stupid apps? Yeah, like a Notepad. Actually, Notepad's a great
stupid
example.
Apps. Wait a minute. Hold on.
I was trying to think of other stupid apps, like not okay. Notepad.
You were the one who said Notepad, Mary Jo, not him.
And then he said, or another stupid app.
No, I was completing I said Media Center or another stupid app. Okay. Like apps that come with Windows 11, like Clipchamp or Xbox or whatever.
There you go. Xbox, perfect example.
Okay. Yeah. Jeez. Nobody would say a thing.
See? Tug of war, folks.
Nobody would say a thing.
Right. Exactly. Because those are separate apps, right?
But they're bundled with the operating. So File Explorer is this an app? I mean, why can't they update File Explorer?
I'm not
saying I agree with this. But this is the... But it's an app.
I know. This is the thinking, right?
It's an app.
Yeah,
this is why they made all the changes to how they update Windows, so they can do this kind of thing. Now,
but you don't get do you get File Explorer through the store? No, right? Or do you?
No. No, you don't.
No.
Nope.
Okay.
But here's, now I'm going to contradict myself because I feel like that would be how they might defend it. However, here's the problem. If you look at what File Explorer was in the last version of Windows 10 before Windows 11 came out, and you compare that to the version of File Explorer that shipped in Windows 11 last October. Basically, it's the same application, but like so much else in Windows 11, has this new, simpler front end, right? They got rid of the old ribbon-style UI. They have a command bar now. It's a different, you know, whatever. It looks different. Fine. Mm-hmm. You go to sub-things, like the folder options dialog. It's the same classic Win32 interface we've had for years and years and years. So typical surface-level lipstick on the pig type thing. That's what we got in Windows 11. Okay. But then you go to Windows 11 22H2 as we knew it, those many 5 or 6 days ago. And they made navigation changes to the way that the navigation bar works, the way that quick access works. They're calling that view home on the side now. They made these changes. So one of the things I just wrote about in my new Win 22H2 series was how File Explorer had changed. And then 3 or 4 days went by and it changed again. So not only because it's not just tabs. That's an easy thing to describe. Yeah. That build also brings navigational changes to the structure of that navigation bar on the side of File Explorer. You're changing that again. You changed it once in October. You changed it again for 22H2 in June. And then later in June, you changed it again. That shows a lack of planning and strategy and parental or adult oversight. I think that's the issue I have with this. Like, I respect the fact that they can and maybe even should update a thing that is a system component like File Explorer when and if they can. But they just did it twice in like the same month.
Yeah.
It's a little scatterbrained to me.
Yeah.
So
I feel like the other part of this is we're kind of going back to Windows 8 thinking in some scary ways. Like Windows 8, right? Windows 8, they said, you know what? People want updates to their operating system all the time. That, like, look at the phone. That's how people like it. They want to get updates all the time. They're looking for updates. They want them. So that's not true on a PC, especially on a work PC, right? Like, people who are in businesses, they want to have something very predictable and they want to know exactly what is going to be in that thing, right? And they don't want to they don't want to have a situation where they roll something out and then like 2 months later, it's like, oh no, actually it looks completely different and we didn't know that it was right?
Aside from the sheer difficulty of moving from one version of Windows to another back in the day, which is the reason no one normal ever did that. They were scared by it because those things often went so bad. One of the biggest problems with a Windows upgrade is that, you know, where you move my cheese kind of syndrome. Like Microsoft would literally, and this was on purpose, would move things in the start menu or in other interfaces just so people doing support for those systems could look over someone's shoulder and say, oh, that's Windows 2000 or Windows, you know, Vista or whatever. That's what this feels like. We're randomly shuffling where items are in a very crucial productivity-focused day-to-day application like File Explorer. That's, you know, we're not adding like podcast support or something to the media player app. Who cares? This is, this is like a crucial system element. Like, why would you screw with that this often? Yeah. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and yet the other thing that would help, we're trying to give constructive criticism here, not just bash, right?
Sure.
At least we're trying to, in theory. Another thing that would help is some kind of an explanation if you do change something like that, why? Right? Like when you write the blog post, you just don't say, here it is, guys. Here's Tab File Explorer and all the navigation changes. You have a section where you say, and here's why we're changing this again. We found that people couldn't navigate this. People hated this or loved this. And
well, they must have done that. There must have been a 3,000-word blog post that explained in great detail what they were doing and why they did it. There must be, right? No, there isn't.
Yeah.
What there is a 300-word blog post that says nothing. That's all boilerplate code with a single sentence that says, hey, by the way, we're bringing tabs back. Let us know what other tabs features you might want. Tabs features? What does that mean? Does that mean tabs features for the tabs in File Explorer? Or does that mean you're thinking about bringing tabs to other applications in Windows, like Paint or Notepad or whatever, right? There's no way to know because they can't write clearly. These things get like regurgitated out in a heartbeat and they don't make any sense. We shouldn't have to parse something like this.
No. Right? We've gone from extreme to extreme, right? Like you're joking, like the 3,000-word Sanofsky blog post, and now we get the 300 words. Like, is there a happy medium somewhere? Or can we have more than one blog post? Can we have, here's the features, and here's why we did this, right? Like, explain it to people, because I would like to hear what we're doing now, because we weren't doing this before, right? we weren't adding big new features through... once something had RTM'd, we didn't suddenly get a big, giant new feature added. We got like smaller updates, fixes, like little tweaks, right? That's how they usually, through cumulative updates all the way up until it actually starts rolling out to the mainstream. That's how that worked. Suddenly we're like, oh, wait, is Tab File Explorer actually going to be part of RTM?
Mary Jo, that was almost a rant.
I know. I didn't let you have a word edgewise. I'm trying to live up to the tug of war thing.
That's fine. I feel like we've lost two important things since Windows 10. And if you think back to when Windows 10 was new and we were still trying to figure out what was going on, and there were bad things like Windows as a service, which we absolutely did not understand and was not explained clearly in the beginning.
No.
However, the two things I really liked about that transition were a return to transparency. We're going to develop this thing out in the open, give you a chance to provide feedback and impact the product, which they made a big show of talking about every time they added stuff based on feedback. They don't really do that anymore. They talk about feedback, but that's what they did during Windows 8. They talk about it. You're not seeing a lot of feedback-related stuff happening. In fact, what you're seeing is a lot of feedback being ignored. But the other thing was a return to desktop computer centricity, or whatever you want to call that. Windows 8 skewed way too far into the touch-first, mobile-first stuff in a world where 99-whatever% of people were using traditional form factor computers. And they saw very quickly their partners, PC makers, customers, enterprise, and individuals all complained, this is too much, it doesn't make sense, this thing doesn't work on the computers we actually use. So you flash forward, what are we now, 6-7 years later? Guess what? We're all still using those computers, guys. No, we're not running around with tablets. But there, you said a return to kind of the Windows 8 kind of thinking. You're right about what you said, but what I thought you meant by that was this kind of return to we know best. It should be mobile centric. These things are not feedback driven. There's something in Microsoft where they've looked out at what's popular in the world and they've said we got to be mobile. This needs to work and be like iOS or Android or Chrome OS or whatever. It has to be simplified, mobile focused. And it's like, guys, we're still using those computers. Like, most people who have touch capabilities on a laptop, I bet, never use it or don't even know it's there. You know, we're still using mice and trackpads and keyboards and Word and Excel and these big applications. That's what we do. And I feel like it's just like, remember that thing that didn't work in 2012? Let's do that again.
It's still not working.
Right. I'm exactly.
Not, it's crazy. You know, when crazy. I bought this new Dell, I had the choice between touch and not. And I got, I didn't get touch, and I don't miss it. Of course, it's a little far away from
you know what? So I got to say, so I would have, this is one thing Mary and Joe and I would have argued about years ago. Mary and Joe was very much against touch on a laptop or whatever. And I used to always say, look, it doesn't hurt you if it's there. You know, and you may find that you add touch to the series of things. You know, you use a trackpad, you use gestures on a trackpad, you use page up and page down. Maybe some days you'll sit there and scroll through a document. I made this argument. I will tell you today that I was so wrong about this, and it is for the stupidest possible reason. Because this is what happens to me every single day. I do this every day. I not on this computer because it's a non-touch, whatever, big screen. But I'll go lay up on the bed or lay on the couch, open the laptop, just type it away. And it's like a hair on my computer. And I'm like, pff, pff, and it doesn't blow away. So then I put my finger on the screen and I go to swipe it out of the way. And I delete some text or I move something around. And I'm like, you know what? I don't want to be able to move stuff on the screen with my finger. Like I don't actually do that very often. And when I do it to do something else, it screws something up.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
when you're using a two-in-one, though, like a Surface Pro, and maybe you take the keyboard off, that's when touch is useful.
No one takes the keyboard off.
Nobody takes the keyboard off, which really makes you wonder why.
No, there are people who do. There are people who do.
Obviously,
of course, there's people who do everything. That's like, we can't please everybody. Like, this is the, of course there are people. We're going to talk about Windows and ARM in a little while. There are people who will defend that. We're going to talk about the stupid thing they're doing in Teams. There are already people defending that. There's people for everything. Do we have to? Can we get off of this everyone's a winner thing?
But what about your contention that it's no harm in putting touch in there if you don't use it? Sort of, right?
Except it affects.
It depends, right? It depends.
It adds to the weight and the cost, right? It does.
It does. Yeah. Yes, it does.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That there are people who like everything is just a fact. I mean, one of the things I've been doing lately, I talked about this last week, upgrading all my computers to 22H2. Since I talked about that, I went and upgraded some older computers to 22H2. One of those computers is a Surface Book 2. Surface Book 2, the computer is basically all in the screen. So it's a little top heavy, but it's a laptop. You can take the screen off. I got to help you. I don't know why anyone would do that. But one of the kind of fun things about that computer is it can lay on a bed and it doesn't get all hot and everything because the base isn't where the computer is, right? The heat is all dispensing out of the top of the screen.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And that's actually kind of cool. Now, does that mean that all computers should be designed that way and all computers should have touch? No. Like, no, absolutely not. Because honestly, the central point of that computer that you can detach the screen and turn into a really thick laptop or just a clipboard thing if you want, is used by so few people. In fact, it was used by so few people, Microsoft stopped offering it. But in isolation, I sort of appreciate that thing because I use a lot of laptops, and laptops get hot when you use them on a non-flat hard surface. They just do. But like I said, you can't just please everybody.
No,
it's impossible.
Can't.
That's why the new Jurassic Park movie is so terrible. But that's right. I don't know. Yeah. This is how Twitter works. You could make any contention on Twitter, and you'll always find someone who says, no, you're wrong. This is, and every single day. And it could be the smallest, most innocuous thing in the world. It could be the most important, ideal, imaginable. It doesn't matter what it is. So we can debate all these little things, but I guess I would just say, in general, most people use a traditional form factor laptop, and they don't need touch. That doesn't mean it's not good for some people. It doesn't mean that there aren't people who like it. It just means that, in general, most people don't need it or want it. And I feel like that's the target you got to aim for. There can be options for those people who want the other thing, and let them all compete in the open market. I can tell you, Surface Laptop or Surface Pro or those form factors, not the most popular form factor. It's not even, not even close. Not even close. So, they're out there if you want them, but maybe not inflict your needs on the rest of us because most people don't need those things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And they said there was no tug of war in this show.
And then we fall in the mud in the middle, and it's hilarious.
The one thing we both do agree on is we feel like the Insider program and the Windows team needs to come forward and do some explaining about how do the rings work these days? And secondly, how are you rolling out features to people? Like, how are people supposed to know when a bunch of features are just going to show up in a cumulative update versus the feature update? Right.
You just promised you were going to switch from one feature update, two feature updates per year to one. But you also said, just kidding. We can add features anytime. It's funny. Guys, we need a plan. We need to know
more predictability.
When and if. It's not cute. It's not good. Yeah. Like we agree that Windows should be more nimble than having to release updates as part of an operating system update. One of the things that just came out of this Apple thing, it's like, I was watching all the post WWDC stuff and reading things. And one of them was like, new features that are coming to Apple Music. What? Why would that be part of a WWC briefing thing? I guess because Apple Music is part of the, that's stupid. Like, that's just stupid. That's the old way of doing things. I do agree with that, but there needs to be some line, and this is not just like individual preference. Most of Microsoft's revenues and customers are business customers. They need transparency. They need a roadmap. They need to know what's happening and what could happen and when. It's a simple, obvious thing, and it's amazing to me that this many years later we're still having this conversation.
You know what? I wonder if the reason they're not saying it is because they don't know. And they, have we got enough features to package them up into a cumulative update? And when should we throw that out there? Because if you promise people, we're going to do this twice a year, or we're going to do this three times a year, and you don't, you get dinged, right? Like, you're like, oh, they said twice a year, and they haven't done it twice a year, right? So,
that could be
why.
If you're going to disappoint people, do it because you didn't disrupt things. Okay?
Yeah.
You're creating a platform here. This isn't like a balloon store. It's not supposed to be fun. It's
the balloon
store.
I don't know.
It's not supposed to be fun. I think I've said that before. It's not supposed to be fun.
Do you have balloon stores? It's not supposed to be fun. In the kanji?
I don't even know what that came from. Like a party place. You know what I mean? Like this is
party store.
It's not an environment for fun. We're getting work done here. Don't get in the way. Yeah. You know, like that should be job one. It should be like, what's the Hippocratic Oath? You know, do no harm.
Yeah. First, do no harm.
You should treat, if you're create platforms, that's job. Don't do no harm. For job one, do no harm. Right?
Right.
Right.
All right.
Now there's a request for the new logo with Paul in a balloon shop. You're not going to live that one down, buddy.
Welcome to the balloon store, baby. This is it, man. We're in the balloon store now. All right. Let's take a little teeny weeny time out because I want to talk about our sponsor. And then we'll get back with more Windows news. Our show today brought to you by the fabulous folks at Intel, orchestrated by the experts at CDW. Today's bumpy hybrid work model. Bumpy is the least of it. The knowledgeable people at CDW really get what it takes to keep your business productive and protected. They understand that while your needs may change, securing your hybrid workforce never will. That's why CDW works with Intel and can help design a secure remote management solution that works for you. With Intel's vPro platform powered by 12th generation Intel Core processors, and custom configured by CDW, you get hardware-based multi-layer security that will protect against threats. But Intel's vPro platform doesn't stop there. It gives you peace of mind for your business and business class performance all in one. Now let's talk remote manageability. No matter where your hybrid workforce is working, management can access, control, and fix devices from anywhere, even outside the firewall. Which means no matter where your teams are working from, you're still in control. And when you're in control, you can relax. Because with Intel's vPro platform powered by 12th Gen Intel Core processors, your team will be more productive and power through disruptions, letting you and your business focus on other things. For secure remote management and security, trust Intel vPro and IT orchestration by CDW. People who get it. Learn more at cdw.com/intel client. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. Back to the tug of war. two new builds last week. Who wants to take this one? Paul, is that you?
These aren't super important. So, yeah, I can do this really quickly. And there was a new build today as well. So, one of them is important. It's the thing we just talked about. So, they released, 22.621 is the build number that is 22H2. They released 22.621.160 to the beta channel. That's the thing that brought the file explorer tabs and a couple of other small file explorer features. They also released a build to dev channel with the same file explorer changes, as well as some dynamic widgets on the taskbar, which, may or may not ever make their way to Windows. I mean, let's hope not. They're already cluttering this thing up enough as it is. And then today we got a new build, but it's basically just fixes. By the way, this is a dev channel build. In the footnotes to this build, there is an update to Microsoft's official description to what the dev channel is. And it says, the dev channel receives builds that represent long lead work from our engineers with features and experiences that may never get released as we try out different concepts and get feedback. It's important to remember that the builds released to the dev channel should not be seen as being, he adds, matched to any specific release of Windows. And the features included may change over time, be removed or be, he adds, replaced in insider builds, or it may never be released beyond Windows Insiders to general customers. So two grammar mistakes in there. But whatever, this is a slightly tweaked version of what they've said for a while now about the dev channel. And it's what we talked about at the beginning, which is that the dev channel doesn't match to a specific Windows version or whatever. I wish there was an updated explanation of what beta and release preview mm-hmm. were in here. And there is not, because that's the part of the confusion.
I didn't even think it was updated. Like when I read that, yeah, I'm like, what's different about this?
I think they added the two grammar mistakes. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing.
Good to know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Paul's
that's
like
what happens
me.
When you use the Microsoft editor.
Yeah, when I read these things, that's the only thing I notice. Grammatical errors. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, guys, come on.
Who edited
care
this?
Care a little bit. A little bit.
A little bit.
You know?
No, and then there's the other weird quirk, which they've talked about before, but it's going to happen this time as well. Sometimes because they're testing the same feature in dev and beta, and they're doing it with a subset, like the A/B testing thing, people in the beta channel might get the feature before people in the dev channel get it, which That's is right. really weird, right?
Let
that
me,
shouldn't
actually,
happen
let me,
that way, right?
Yeah, let me beat this to death again, because I've made this argument in the past, and I think this is the big thing to remember about the Windows Insider program. You're asking people to set aside a computer to use pre-release software that may or may not ever see its way to fruition or whatever, that you're asking them to test it. You're asking them to provide feedback, that hopefully through providing feedback, they impact some coming feature or some coming version of Windows. And you've provided them with three channels from which to choose. And they have really vague descriptions now. They used to map to specific Windows versions or whatever, and now they kind of don't. But I've described, and Mary Jo agrees, that the dev channel could be thought of as the experimental channel. You have agreed to put a machine on the dev channel to experiment with these new features, but you're not going to get all of the new features? And wait, and now you're telling me that someone who did not agree to be in the experimental channel is going to get some features before me in some cases? Are you kidding me? Like, this is a gross misunderstanding of what this agreement between Microsoft and these people is. And I feel that they are mentally harming, I guess, their biggest fans in doing this. The people look at what the choices are. They make the choice they want, and then they're not getting the thing that Microsoft promises. Yeah. No, A/B testing has no business in the Insider program.
Yeah. I don't understand why it's there. I mean, I know they want people to have a good experience, but if you're agreeing to be an Insider, you have to be assuming some level of risk and some level of technicality where if something goes wrong, you can fix it, or have some ideas how to fix it, right? I saw a guy yesterday on Twitter say, the reason I dropped out of the Insider program was this A-B testing thing. Like, that's right. not what yep. I'm here for, right?
No,
like,
listen, how deflating is it? I want to test this. I want to see this stuff. I want to see future right? features. I want to test features that may not even make it into Windows. I'm excited by that. Yep. And then the announcement yep. comes like, oh, nice, there's a new build. What do we got? File Explorer tabs. Awesome. I've been dying to test that feature. I wanted sets to happen in Windows 10. Oh, let me read all about it. Oh, it's only coming to... What? Like, what is that? If it's only coming to some testers, it should go to dev channel testers. That's the A of the A and B. That's like, you don't... I don't yeah. understand why they would screw people over like that. These are people who have gone out of their way to help Microsoft, and they're like... getting smacked in the face every other week now by these yeah. A-B tests. It's ridiculous.
I mean, they say ultimately you will get, everybody in the channel will get the feature, but I just still feel really? Like you get people excited take it away? About no, it. Right.
Yeah, ultimately, everyone that. On Earth will get it. I yeah. said I want yeah. them now by choosing to put a computer in the dev channel. Yeah. Microsoft did not buy me a computer to do that. This is my computer. I have decided to right. take my time. I'm manually installing builds and rebooting computers, sending in feedback, and you're not giving me the thing. Are you yeah. kidding me? They do this over and over and over again. It's awful.
Yeah.
It's yeah. awful.
I just think it would be good. I know they do Insider podcasts where they talk to people who are in the Insider program on a regular basis, but I feel like mm-hmm. there needs to be something where they explain the thinking and the program publicly.
Yeah, you mean like a trial, like decide. Nuremberg, where they actually put those people up on a stand
really
and they have to answer.
Of that wasn't really the metaphor I had in mind.
Did I go too far? Is it a balloon store in Nuremberg? Is that the
it one? Is? Okay. There you go. I think we're
is
back
it a
to
literal
the
war
store.
Crime that they're doing A and B testing? No, I don't. Let's find out.
No.
I think you're very highly incensed about it. I think they need to give an explanation. I think it would be very,
I don't think
very
they talk
positive.
They talk about feedback. They talk about insiders. I don't yeah. think they have any understanding of the harm they're doing to these people. They're making a big mistake. No, I'm serious. Whatever the size of this audience is, I guarantee you it's smaller today, active testers, yeah. because of this. They're just, this is not what you do to those people.
Right.
It's understandable that you want to A-B test things, I guess. But I don't even know what A-B testing even means, honestly, in this context. You're putting the feature in or you're not. If you literally have something that's for experimental new features that might not make it, use it for that thing.
Yeah,
that's what you do. That's right. It's simple. It sounds simple. I don't know. I guess it's not. I don't know.
Yeah. It's a hard computer science problem. That's all I can say.
it's really a psychology problem is what it is. But
that was the first of the two new builds. And there's a new one today, right?
Yeah,
that has nothing in it.
Nothing in it.
Nothing.
Okay. Not even Explorer tabs? Okay.
The other thing, by the way, actually, just because I was afraid we were not going to rant enough today. The build that added the File Explorer tabs to dev arrived last Wednesday or Thursday, I remember the day. I want to say Thursday. It must have been Thursday. I don't think we talked about it last week, but it was Wednesday or Thursday. The build that added it to the beta channel arrived Monday.
Monday.
They never released. Yeah. They don't release builds on Monday ever.
No.
Now, I guess maybe that suggests they might have meant to put them out at the same time or something. But again, you know, we're sort of forced to accept that the Insider channels have changed to whatever they are for reasons that maybe we don't completely understand, but there's some rationale to them. That fact to me suggests that the rationale is even more specious than I think it is, which is that you would test something in the dev channel for some time, then you would bring it to beta. But they did it 4 days later. There was no feedback. There was no time.
Plus, let me ask you this. There were tabs in Explorer in the dev channel before, right? And it got pulled. But did they redo the whole way that worked and then reintroduced it? Or is it the exact same way that it worked before?
I don't know.
I'm just curious about if they made changes.
That I don't know.
Yeah.
Visual Studio 2022 now running natively Windows on ARM. Paul Thurrott, your turn.
Is it?
Okay. Well,
Well, I'll just write about the fact that I tried this.
So, there you go.
Yesterday. So I should say, was it last week or 2 weeks ago at Build, Microsoft announced they were bringing a bunch of things to ARM. I should say a bunch of developer things. .NET, a new version of the classic .NET framework, 4.8.1, native on ARM. Visual C++, native on ARM. And then Visual Studio. Now, this will be a version of Visual Studio that comes out at the end of the year, so it's in preview now. And that's what they released yesterday. Seeing this, I thought, I have a Windows on ARM computer. I will install this. I want to see what this is like. This is a subset of the full Visual Studio experience in the sense that when you bring up Visual Studio, you have some selection of workloads. I should just tell you what they are instead of just saying what they are.
Can you cross-compile from are. It? I mean, do you have to only compile to ARM?
Yeah, so if you are on Intel, which or AMD today, you can, depending on the type of app, create ARM executables.
Oh, interesting.
Now, yeah, you have to put them some. You know, technically, you should test those, right?
Obviously.
On an ARM PC. Yeah, so what they've done is they brought the Visual Studio IDE, which is a very big program, and they've ported it to ARM. So the x86, x64, actually it's x64 now, version of Visual Studio supports, I'm just going to count here, 8, 9, 12, 15, whatever, workloads, right? And there's some classics in there, Universal Windows Platform Development, .NET Desktop Platform, Desktop Development, which is WPF, Windows Forms, etc. Mobile Development, which is Xamarin today, will be MAUI soon. Desktop Development with C++, which is the classic Win32 stuff. ASP.NET and Web Development, ASP.NET, etc., etc. Okay, so there's a bunch of it. There's all kinds of stuff. When I install Visual Studio, I typically install two or three of those workloads. So I do .NET Desktop Development because I write apps in Windows Presentation Foundation. I did the Windows Forum thing, and I do Universal Windows Platform Development. And sometimes I'll add Desktop Development. The truth is, I don't do a lot with that. And I'm looking forward to doing MAUI in the future. But the thing that I install is typically between 16 and 18 gigabytes of stuff. We'll call it 17 gigs. It downloads and installs together. If I'm on a new computer, any laptop, modern laptop, this will take me about 30 minutes. That's how long it takes. I started yesterday afternoon at about, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I went to my one Windows on ARM computer. It had to install like a BIOS update thing, so I did that. It took a long time. Everything takes a long time. And it's on the dev channel because I'm an idiot, so I did install the latest Windows Insider build. That took the rest of the afternoon because at one point it rebooted and never installed, and then I started it up again, but we were going out last night, and when I got home, it was ready to reboot and actually install, and so this happened overnight. So I lost yesterday. So I meant yesterday to test this. Windows on ARM is just a nightmare, so it took forever. This morning I got up, and I installed Visual Studio. And there were three workloads that it can install. What are they? They're Desktop Development with C++, .NET Development, again, Windows Forms, WPF, and Universal Windows Platform Development. I'm like, cool. The total install size of this thing is 1.6 gigabytes. It is one-tenth the size of the normal thing that I install.
Huh.
So I'm like, well, great. Because it probably doesn't have a lot of the legacy optional components. I don't know. Who knows? So I installed the whole thing. I did this. I made coffee and started this install and then got on with my day, which involves reading the newspaper, cleaning up a little bit, walking the dog, which takes 30 minutes. This thing never completed during all of that. I got home from walking the dog. It was still not done. It took an hour and 17 minutes just to install, download and install one-tenth of Visual Studio. what? So that was horrible, but I think this speaks to the problem with Windows on ARM today, which is Microsoft has actually made some big steps in recent months. There have been native versions of Notepad, that media player app. The Microsoft Store is now native on ARM in the Insider program. They're bringing all this developer stuff to Windows on ARM. They're obviously really serious about this. But the hardware platform itself is still garbage. The computer I'm using is beautiful. It's an HP EliteBook Folio. It's one of the sweetest computers I own. It is one of the best keyboards I've ever used in a laptop. It's very similar like the one that Mary Jo has. It's similar in many ways to the Surface laptop or Surface Book, whatever. It's beautiful. Man, does it run slow. But I will say this. For all the hours and hours, everything later, I went to GitHub, brought up one of the WPF version of my app, cloned it onto Visual Studio on the ARM computer. I waited a long time, because Windows and ARM. compiled that thing and ran it, and it worked fine. It works fine. Hmm. Like, it worked. Mm-hmm. So, I know this is like a, listen, and you know, with the Apple world, it's that's nothing. Like, on our side of the fence, like, this working at all to me was a minor miracle. I was positive it was going to cough something up. Like, there's some component in here that's not of something. Because, like I said, it's only like a tenth the size. Like, something must mm-hmm. be missing, but it worked fine.
Good.
It worked just fine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. .NET 6, WPF. Nice.
Wow, that's slower really than, interesting.
You know,
yeah. Well, slow. Molasses, everything's slow.
But it worked.
Is the compilation yeah. must be really pathetically slow.
It's slow, yeah. What's really slow is, you know, XAML, which is Microsoft's like visual designer, now, you know, that they've had mm-hmm. since 2006 or whatever, dates back to Longhorn, is a way to kind of visually design a UI. And you can write it in code, which is very similar. It's XML or very similar to HTML. They offer a split view where you can see a preview of it and the code at the same time. I always turn that off because it's too slow on any computer.
Right.
But on the ARM computer, it was like bringing up a Commodore 64. Like, it's going to get there. Just give it a second.
Yeah.
You know, eventually.
It's funny in this day and age to see that. I mean, you just really don't get the opportunity to see things like, well, let me just show you something you might remember from the good old days. Internet Explorer has encountered a problem and needs
I have a video
close.
For you to play for this.
Nice.
So if you go to my
this
Twitter
is a
account.
Website, lagplorer.tms.sx. That's all it does. That's all it does.
You got to bring up my Twitter account.
I will bring up your Twitter, yes.
Silvato posted a video about IE.
And why are we doing this today? Because the end
today,
of the line.
It's
man.
The day.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of the day, right? Everything
sort
with Microsoft,
of
Microsoft has an asterisk, right?
Yeah.
But for normal people, for people running Windows 10, Internet Explorer is finally going away.
Most people.
You got to hear the audio, though, for this to make sense.
I don't know if I can. I'll put my microphone next to it. I don't know if I can get the audio for you.
Yep.
Welcome to a more beautiful web. So this and then Internet Explorer has
perfect.
Stopped working.
Perfect ending.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. It's a beautiful, beautiful web.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I had people ask me, what does this mean?
Yeah.
Like, okay, today's the day. So what does it mean? Does it mean they take it away? No. It does not mean that. starting today, it will no longer get any security updates. So the end of support is officially now, right? Like, so I've had people say, I don't care. I'm going to just keep running it. I don't care if it's patched for security. I'm like,
who
okay.
says that?
Yeah.
Really?
Idiots.
Wait, what?
Idiots.
What?
I know.
Who wants to
people
run
like,
IE?
Yeah, I'll take my chances.
Who wants
I'm like,
to run
okay.
IE?
Okay.
Why?
I know. Some
That's
people
amazing.
Have websites or apps. Well, it still actually will work with apps to some extent because they didn't kill Trident, the HTML inside
right,
of
right.
apps. But the other thing is what they're going to start doing is they'll start redirecting you. So if you click on, if you have an Internet Explorer icon on your taskbar and you click on it and you think you're going to get IE 11, it'll start redirecting you to Edge. Like gradually you're going to get redirected because Edge has IE mode in it. So if you really still do need IE,
right.
you can run it in IE mode in Edge, right? At some point,
when you run an IE mode, is it still using the Chromium engine or is it using Trident, the Trident engine?
I do not know. Do you, Paul?
What does that even
sure
mean?
Right?
Yeah, what does it mean to be running in IE mode?
That's a good question.
Yeah,
you might as well maintain it if you're going to build that into Edge.
Well, they say do not disable IE.
Yeah, it does use Trident. Right? It uses Trident for legacy sites, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, right. The thing that you need to know, though, is, okay, no more security updates. They're not going to physically remove it for some time. We don't know for how long. But at some point, there's going to be an update that comes through Windows Update that will take it away.
Whoosh.
But we don't know when.
Right.
Also, things to know that IE Mode and Edge will be supported through at least 2029. All right. So is it really dead? It's still right there through at least 2029 in IE Mode.
This is like, you know, like
slow,
Lenin's tomb where you can walk by this formaldehyde body in a case.
IE.
And it's like, yeah. and then like 10 years go by and you're like, hey, let's have a funeral for this guy. It's like, what are you talking about? He's been dead forever. You know, like most people stopped using IE many years ago, right? You know, Microsoft, partially because of what was going on with Longhorn, stopped developing IE. There was a 5 or 6 year pause there with no new features, no new nothing. Yep. And that's when Firefox kind of came out and took over for a while. Then Chrome happened. And that was the end of that. And it's too bad. You know, Microsoft had the best browser from a functionality perspective for several years. They really did. I mean, I would say from IE 3 through 6, it was the best browser there was. But ultimately, the legacy of this thing, I think, and I was just thinking about this earlier today, is that they finally defeated the power of the defaults. You know, even normal people know when they install Windows, the next thing they do is go get Chrome. You know, they finally found a way to overcome defaults by making a browser that was so bad that people only used it to install its competitor. You know, it's a crazy thing. In fact, it probably is hampering Edge usage today. I think there's still a feeling like, you know, out in the populace that they need to get Chrome, even though I think for most people, Edge would solve this problem just as easily or just as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting thing. It is. Yeah. It's why they got rid of the brand, right? It's poisoned.
Yeah. Although the logo, remember the first iteation of the Edge logo looked a lot like the IE logo.
It's slowly morphed, hasn't it?
It did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we want to use the term metastasized, Leo. But yes.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. Nice. Yeah. If you're running IE on the LTSC, long-term servicing channel versions of Windows 10, on Windows 7 with extended security updates on server, it's still supported on those platforms.
Windows 8.1.
It's not going away.
Yep.
Windows 8.1. Right.
Because there's no Edge. Right. They're still supporting it in places where there's no Edge. Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. So they'll support it as long as the operating system itself is supported on each of those platforms. So you have to go look up your support date, end of support date for those, and that's when they're ending it.
That's the asterisk, because it's really IE 11 on Windows 10, I guess, right? That's kind of the thing that's unsupported at this point, which is probably the biggest chunk of the user base by far. Mm-hmm. But
I found somebody who is unhappy about this. According to the Wall Street Journal,
of course,
Sam Maumalanga, a 31-year-old Polynesian dance instructor in Euless, Texas.
What?
Yeah. He says, I'm still trying to process it. I've used it for so long. It's the first thing I get on my laptop. Which tells me he doesn't know what he's talking about, because doesn't it come with your laptop? You don't have to get it?
I don't understand.
I bet he's getting Chrome.
He doesn't know what he's talking about. It's the first thing I get.
He's downloading Chrome and he thinks that's IE.
It's the first thing that I get. It's like, what do you mean? Like you contracted it? What are you talking about?
It's crazy, he adds. I love the Wall Street Journal. They managed to find somebody for everything.
Yeah, they'll find a nut.
All these years, everybody has been using it, and all of a sudden, they're going to take it away.
Yep, that's what happened.
This guy obviously has no idea what he's talking about.
This is Twitter, you know?
No, this is the Wall Street Journal.
No, I know, but this is what Twitter
Same
does
thing
to
on
people.
Twitter.
This is how our brains have been rewired, right? Like I made a joke about this and some guy was like, "Don't be mean, I'm sure you used IE for years." Yeah, I used diapers for years too. I don't have nostalgia for it.
In the balloon store.
You know, like this. Here's another one. A 22-year-old TikToker from Peterborough, Ontario. He's 22. He says it's sad to see it go. For him, Internet Explorer provided a portal to a world of endless information and computer games.
Oh, man.
He's 22.
Another one. No idea. None. He's probably using Edge.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's probably using Chrome like everyone else. But like, where do they find these people?
Here's
like
I said, Joni Casey, a 67-year-old retiree in Ellicott City, Maryland, says The Internet Explorer browser is one of the three that pop up on my cell phone.
No, absolutely not.
What?
That's not true. Nope, that's
what?
Not true.
Is there an IE for cell phones?
And why would it pop up on your cell phone?
It was on Windows phones, you know, Windows
mobile
phones.
Maybe she might have a Windows phone. Maybe that's it.
Well, if she does, it's from 2005 or something.
Because we have too many choices. I sort of feel like the fewer choices, the better.
Well, good. They got rid of IE. You're welcome.
Where did they find these people?
You got to wonder. You really got to wonder.
It's crazy. Yeah. This is like Sony announced today that they got rid of the cassette-based Walkman.
Yeah.
And now we can get all these people, oh, my God, that's how we listen to music in the 1980s.
How would I ever listen to music again? I can't.
I know. If only there was a way.
This is the only one I believe. Daryl Burke, a 29-year-old filmmaker, lives in Wilmington, North Carolina, says his mother will have a hard time letting go.
There you go. There we go.
Once it sets in, he says, it will blow her mind. She'll never notice. Don't worry, Daryl.
She won't.
She's not going to notice. She has no idea.
What, how much usage share does IE have today?
Good
one
question.
Point something percent? It's got to be nothing.
I think the Journal found all of them.
Low. Yep.
I don't think the Journal found any of them, actually.
No, this is made up. You're going to quote me? All right, yeah. Sure.
What do you want? What do you want? Are you looking for outrage or just sadness? Because I got it. I got either way. I got
unbelievable.
It.
Unbelievable. Golly, who wrote this article? Alyssa.
IE is 0.64% in May 2022. But you know what, guys? It fell dramatically. A year ago, it was 0.62%. It actually went up. 0.2% year over year. So it was trending upward and Microsoft killed it. How mean is that?
Sad. I'm still trying to process it. How could they do this to me? It's the first thing I install on my computer.
Sure it is. Sure it is.
Okay.
Oh, Lord. It pops up on my cell phone with three other browsers.
If I type in install Internet Explorer, you can't.
You can't.
You can't find it. Like, it's not a...
Well, and that's always the joke. Internet Explorer is the number one browser for installing other browsers.
Right.
That's the joke. Is that's all anybody ever used it for was to install Chrome.
Yep.
27 years, we hardly knew ye, i.e.,
you haven't used it since 2012. What are we talking about? Nobody's 2012 might even be conservative. No. I mean, what year did Chrome come out? Nobody. This is guys. Chrome was a one-way dead end street. This is crazy.
I love it that it's this is your article. Say goodbye to Internet Explorer is under the premium portion of your blog.
Oh, because I have my little stories about. Yeah. My interactions with various people. I met Joe Belfiore because of Internet Explorer back in the day.
Oh, really? That's cool.
I was good friends with the guy who ran IE team for a long time. He used to come to my house with Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh, yeah. This has got all these anecdotes. Oh, you know what? Mm-hmm. You want to read this. This is awesome.
Here's someone who actually did use Internet Explorer, unlike the Wall Street Journal readers.
Right.
Yeah, and as you point out...
And I gave up on it a long time ago.
Yeah, it's been dead for a long time. This is not...
They used to try to convince me, i.e., you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever, you know, we used to have these discussions. It was like, guys, the world has moved past. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Like,
time to move on.
But I got to point out, now that IE's gone, PC sales are plummeting.
Well,
direct correlation right there.
Yeah. This is turning into a bipolar conversation, you know. About whether or not PC sales are going to keep rising or falling or what's going on.
I prefer to think of it as a tug of war, Paul.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. it's a tug of war between the left and the right side of my brain, I guess. Every week there's evidence to the contrary of whatever happened the previous week. Mm-hmm. You know, we just talked about Dell and Lenovo, Blockbuster, I think record revenues in both cases, largely from PC sales. Bam, you know, going great. And then IDC came out and was like, hold on a second. And they have all these great reasons. There's always reasons, right? You know, there's component shortages before still, but they don't mention that. Today it's war, inflation, and lockdowns in China, baby. And because of this, they expect PC sales to fall 8.2% this year, and that's still to a pretty healthy over 300 million units, which is great. But they also look out a little further, which I think is kind of interesting. And they expect to see PC growth return next year. And then, of course, these were the guys who said Windows Phone was going to overtake the iPhone. So asterisk oh. that as well. But
oh, those guys. Okay.
Yeah, those guys. PC sales, I talk a lot about plateauing in the PC industry. Like when PC sales declined for, I think it was 6 or 7 years in a row, I kept looking for where does it plateau? Because I didn't see it falling off a cliff. Like I felt like it had to stop at one point. And it looks like we're going to be, this is IDC numbers, but in the 300 to 330 million range for several years. So this might be the new normal, honestly. Not it falling every year, but rather it just hitting some kind of a level, which is honestly a really good level for what kind of device this is. So it's not right. You know, I'm sure there won't be wars or endemics or component shortages or China lockdowns or anything next year. It'll be fine. So, you know, this is like one bad year. Just take it, you know, for what it's worth and we'll be fine.
Yeah.
Probably. And I'm going to Mexico because I can't take it anymore. Anyway, it's fine.
I'll meet you there.
Yeah.
Because I love hail, you know.
We'll be in the hail together.
Yeah. It's going to hail. Let's take a little time out.
The world is going to hail.
The world is going to hail. At least Mexico City is. And talk about our sponsor. Oh, I'm so excited. My new coffee is here. I subscribe to Trade Coffee. We've talked about that before. If you love coffee, you'll love this idea. Just like Mary Jo is always talking about craft beers, there are amazing craft roasters all over the country. And that's the beauty of Trade Coffee. It brings you the coffees direct from those roasters. I just finished up an excellent espresso from Lake Tahoe, from a Tahoe roaster called Drink Coffee, Do Stuff. But it was a great espresso. So this is just in the nick of time. Let's see who this is from. Everyone is directly shipped from a local roaster to our location, just as they will be to you. Fortune favors the bold. Necessary coffee. Strong partners make rich coffees. Yeah, see, they know that I like the dark roasts. Tastes like bittersweet cocoa molasses. Where is this located? Oh, it's in Lancaster, PA. That's right up the road. Is that up the road from you, Paul? Lancaster?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's about an hour from here.
So my family. My family's from Erie, so up north, right?
This is it's kind of an Amish area.
100% Arabica. Oh, wow. Look at that. Backyard compost friendly. I like that. Because we're doing the compost now here in California. So Trade Coffee connects you directly to the freshest, best-tasting coffee ever made at home by partnering with the country's best craft roasters. Independent businesses from big cities and small towns. Is Lancaster's kind of in the middle, I would say. Yeah? That's right. That's where you get those great soft pretzels and the... Oh, I love the Amish stuff there. Cool. There's a QR code on it so you can learn about the coffee. This makes a big difference for these small roasters, by the way. We get beans. You can get it ground, but we like to grind it for extra freshness. 60 of the country's best craft roasters. These are small businesses, and every one of them pays farmers fair prices. They sustainably source the greatest beans from around the world, so you can feel good about it. And you don't have to be a coffee snob. If you just like coffee, you're going to love Trade, because Trade's real coffee experts personally taste test over 450 roasts, and that way they know exactly what to recommend. Now, how do they know that I would like Fortune Favors the Bold, a nice dark roast? Because I took the questionnaire at the beginning. In fact, if you go right now to drinktrade.com/windows, take the questionnaire. That way they'll pick a coffee. And it's not saying, well, what kind of coffee you like. It's what tastes you like, what flavors you like. And that's important because, you know, everybody has different coffee tastes. So you're going to get a selection of specific coffees just for you, different from everyone else. And it's delivered fresh to you, and you can do it as often as you want. You don't have to get it, you know, on a regular schedule if you don't want to. Trade delivers a bag of freshly roasted coffee as whole beans or ground for however you brew it at home.
fine, medium, coarse. They guarantee you'll love your first order or they will replace it for free. 5 million bags now of fresh coffee from sustainable growers and the best, oh man, this smells so good, the best coffee roasters. That's the other thing you'll love. I have a rural mailbox, rural root mailbox, and when the trade comes, I open it up and I know it's here because I smell it. It smells so good. 5 million bags of fresh coffee. They delivered 750,000 positive reviews. And if you're a new subscriber, they're going to give you $30 off your first order plus free shipping. So that's a heck of a deal. That's more than 40 cups of coffee free. Drinktrade.com/windows. $30 off your first order. Just take the quiz. Start it off by taking the quiz. Drinktrade.com/windows. Let trade find a coffee you will love. Drinktrade.com/windows. If you go there right now, I think you could get in there in time for Father's Day. That'd be a great subscription if Dad likes coffee. In fact, come to think of it, this is like, for me, this would be the best Father's Day present, much better than a tie. Drinktrade.com/windows. Thank you, Trade. For some, I love this. Fortune favors the bold. Matt Damon. Of course, he was talking about
your office. It looks like the Imperial throne room in there today.
Is it because I'm wearing my lovely purple
in the
jacket?
Red background?
In the red background, yeah. We're going for classy here at Windows Weekly, the brand new classy version of Windows Weekly.
Well, I don't like it. We're not classy.
Not one bit, no. gaming, is this the Xbox segment? Are you doing an Xbox segment, but you're not calling it an Xbox segment?
Well, see, Mary Jo threw a little wrench into our plans.
Why is that?
Because, well, you should ask Mary Jo.
Mary Jo.
Oh, well, I wanted to lead the show today with Xbox and gaming.
Oh, my God. Yep. No, that
only
would be,
because
we had a little tug of war over it.
That'd be wrenching.
We did. Only because there was so much stuff announced over the past few days.
Oh. Well, this is E3 time, even though there is no E3. And despite the fact that they've said there'll be one next year, I can't imagine there will be. I think it's pretty much over. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of cool. We were talking about this with Patrick Beja on Twit on Sunday, that there still is kind of all of these announcements coming out. I mean,
Everyone's doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm not surprised you have a lot of news.
This is a good time of year for stuff that's going to, you know, basically impacts the holiday season, right?
Mm-hmm. Although lots of times, at least at E3, they would announce games that aren't going to come out till next year.
True. Yeah. Well, it's like it's their CES.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know. So Microsoft, did they have an event? What did they do?
They had a couple of
the wrong
events.
Person, Leo.
This is Mary Jo's story?
I know.
I had to write up something. I was forced against my will.
Well, Paul, I'll leave you on the screen in case you want to comment. Normally, this is the time to let Mary Jo feed the cat. But
usually, games is more of a Mary Jo thing. I don't know.
No. So I have some of these announcements were interesting, and at least one was horrifying to me. So let me go through them.
I can't wait to find out which one.
I know which
one I'm going to say was horrifying.
I actually am not sure which one you are going to say.
Okay.
Let me think about it.
So they had an event, a virtual event, What's Next for Gaming 2022 from Microsoft. And they talked about some hardware, but mostly services announcements. That's why I think Microsoft briefed me, because Xbox gaming does run on Azure. So I guess they thought maybe because I could make that connection, I would write something.
I think Paul put him up to it, but okay.
I think he might have. Yeah. So let's start with the horrifying first. Get that right out of the way. Microsoft is going to add gaming integrations into Edge. There's going to be a gaming new tab page, which will be personalized gaming homepage for you with your news, your game guides, even upcoming and newly released games, and access to your most recently played games. Okay.
Is that optional? I don't have to have that if I use it.
Right. If you're a gamer, this must sound fantastic.
Yeah.
If you are a normal person who is not a gamer, a business user, there's got to be a way to turn this off.
Yeah.
Right? There's got to be a way that your users never, ever can see this.
Yeah.
Right?
yeah.
Yeah. Has to be.
Yeah.
Smithers, what's that gaming tab you have on your browser?
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that's
we used
not.
To like yes, switch from a game to an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah, the boss button.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, that one was a little scary. I didn't really get into the details of how
on.
You can.
I'm sure you'll.
There
have
must
to
be
on.
A way. Yeah. There must be a way. Yeah. They also announced a deal. This is really funny. My downstairs neighbor, who knows I cover technology, he was so excited about this announcement. He had to like start sending me tons of texts all morning about this one. Samsung smart TVs are getting the Xbox app, right?
Yes,
so that you could play games on the TV without having to have a console. I think so we live in very small apartments. He doesn't want a gaming console in his house, right?
Yes. So this is, to be clear, this is Xbox Cloud Gaming, which
Xbox
is the streaming
gaming,
service.
Right. Yeah. Right. So he was so excited about this. He's like, wait, so I don't have to have a gaming console, but I could play games on my Samsung smart TV. I said, do you have a Samsung smart TV? He's like, aren't all smart TVs Samsung? I'm like, I don't think so. But
So the problem for him is probably going to be it might not be recent enough to get this app.
Right. Right.
Depending on the age of the, you know, it
yeah.
Most likely.
He may go get a TV just for this. He was, okay. I'm not kidding you. The guy texted me like there was a stream of text. I'm like, okay, so John, I got to keep working now. Like, this is good. I'm glad you're excited.
That's amazing
here,
to
go
me.
Watch
I mean,
this.
smart TV apps by nature are not usually very good.
And right.
You'd be better off with almost any other kind of app. If there was an Xbox app on Apple TV or Amazon Fire TV or whatever.
But. Right. Right. What else do they talk about? You're going to be able to bring your own games to Xbox Cloud Gaming later this year. That seemed kind of big.
That's very interesting. Yeah. I think the theory there, it's digital games, obviously. So if you own a game, like I bought all the Call of Duties or whatever, I'll be able to stream them. That actually solves a big problem with Xbox Game Pass, Xbox Cloud Gaming, which is that, there are hundreds of games, but in my case, especially, it's not the games I play. So this is, if as long as you own a game and it can stream, that's actually, that's almost
that's
like an exponential improvement. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Yep. Argentina and New Zealand get added to Xbox Cloud Gaming as new regions starting June 9th. So that already happened. Curated demos of upcoming games on Xbox Game Pass so you can find new games. This had a code name, which I thought was interesting. Yeah. Project Moorcroft.
Right. Hopefully after Michael Moorcroft of the Elric saga and whatnot.
I had no idea who that is or what that is, but yeah.
Okay. It's a series. He wrote several series of books. Not Conan. There were others. Elric's the one I remember, but there were actually more famous series than that one.
Nice.
I'll look it up.
Coming sometime next year for Project Moorcroft. And then this one, you've got to explain to me. I have no idea what these words mean. I wrote them in my story, but I don't know what they mean. Xbox Design Lab is coming so people can optimize their colors and camo top cases. No idea. With matching side caps. Nonsense words in my world, but like something you can design. Something you can customize? Like, is that customizing your controllers, maybe?
Yeah, so the Xbox Design Lab already exists. It allows you to create customized controllers, different color schemes and whatnot. So they're adding more colors, more color schemes. I didn't look at this too closely because I was like, whatever. But you just said something interesting, which suggests you're going to be able to do Design Lab for things that are not just the controllers. Read what you said again about it. You said custom controllers. Okay. What else?
Allow people to optimize their colors and camo top cases with matching side caps.
Camo top cases.
I have no idea.
In other words, maybe they're doing some kind of a. I'll have to look at it. I guess I will.
Like a pool professional has a pool cue case.
Or possibly they mean the case for the console itself.
Oh.
You know?
Well, that'd be cool.
I don't know.
It's camo, so no one knows you're carrying around a gaming machine.
Hawkmoon and Corum were the other Eternal
Rob Bot. Rob Bot in Discord says they're adding camo as a color option, so maybe it's not anything like what I wrote.
Okay. There you go. Okay. I thought it was just new colors. Yeah, so, okay.
Maybe I just totally did not understand it or was asleep when I was writing it. That could have also been the case. Yeah, I think those are the highlights, aren't they?
There's more. But yeah, that's okay. That is actually most of it. There was a related event on Sunday where they previewed over 20 games coming from Bethesda and other Xbox partners. I honestly wasn't too blown away by this. I hear Bethesda and I think of the games I like, you know, like Castle Wolfenstein and et cetera, et cetera. But there are other games coming like Starfield, which I think was probably the big one. But they released a list of, this is not all games, but games coming to Xbox/PC over the next 12 months, some of them this year, some of them next year. And they've never really done this kind of a deep dive. I didn't come away too blown away by this. And this includes all kinds of things. I mean, just games that are being released on the platform.
Minecraft, it's like this. Legends, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's that?
Look at me, it was acting like I know.
Minecraft Legends is a Minecraft engine adventure game.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, it actually looks pretty good. Yeah, there's a bunch of flight simulator stuff. Flight Sim is getting the one of the aircraft from the Halo games, which is actually kind of fun. And they also announced a U.S. expansion pack today, a world, what do they call it, a world update today or yesterday, which is actually kind of interesting. So they've done a bunch of those. But yeah, no, that was most of it for sure. A bunch of stuff. I mean, this comes in the wake of news that Microsoft was about to release a dongle and then decided not to. And I think one of the issues they have with game cloud gaming, which is the game streaming service, is you want to put it everywhere. So there's a web client and more web stuff coming to Edge, obviously. So that gets it on Mac and, you know, Linux is a native client on Windows. There are clients on mobile, on Android, because of Apple. We have to use a web browser on Apple's platforms. But what they really need to kind of go to the next step is smart TVs, right? And so not just smart TV apps like they're doing with Samsung, but also, like I said, Roku, Fire TV, Apple TV. You know, this thing needs to be everywhere. So I think originally they were planning their own little HDMI dongle, and now they're doing something else. So
that's cool. Mm-hmm.
We'll see. Yeah. Yeah.
Did they answer the question that came up when they bought Bethesda and now they're going to buy EA about making those exclusive to Xbox? They said they wouldn't.
They're not going to answer that question that way. Like, in other words, are we or aren't we? They did indicate that there would be more exclusives over the next year than had been the case since the acquisition went through. So, there's going to be more of that. I mean, it's kind of a platform benefit. I think the right way to do it, though, is to make things exclusive. They didn't say this. I'm sorry. I'm just making this up. That they should, if they're going to do exclusives, it should be a timed exclusive and then put it everywhere. If you look at what Sony's doing, Sony just announced plans to put 50% of their games or whatever the number was on PCs by a couple of years from now. I mean, that's the right way to do it, I think, is to reach as many gamers as possible. I think we're getting to the end of, or we should be getting to the end of the platform exclusive.
Yeah, kind of makes sense. Thing. They don't need to do that.
Yeah.
In fact, most of the coverage I saw was really, this is what Game Pass really comes into its own kind of thing.
Yeah. Yep. Yo, totally. And actually, to me, it's the games you own coming now. Like, yes.
Yeah,
it's like,
isn't
here
that
we
interesting?
Go. Here we go. Yeah. That makes it really interesting. Mm. Yep. Yep. That will get me to pay for this. I already paid for
you already
this,
paid but, for it but no but no but for I mean, somebody I, but, who buys games yeah. that's yes. kind of what you need because I have this library
right
and yep. I already have my
I want to play it everywhere
I yeah. want it everywhere yep. yeah mm-hmm. That does. It's totally compelling, I think.
Well, that changes things. Like, I go, if I go away, like, I don't play Call of Duty when I'm away, but I could now, and it's already in sometime soon. That's kind of interesting. Like, it's a nice little
version.
How
do you think this is going to work? Like, how would you...
Poorly.
Physically, what do you do? Like, upload your game right. to...
No, so you would stream it. Well, I presumably you'd stream it. I assume you're not downloading it. So what you should be able to do through Xbox Cloud Gaming is I could have, like, a Windows computer or laptop. Mm-hmm. I'm on some kind of a trip or whatever in the hotel room. And you run the Xbox app. And today, the way you do that is you're streaming games over the service. The games that will come up now will include the games that I purchased digitally. They'll stream them from their data centers. Mm-hmm. I'll have to have an Xbox controller.
Yeah.
And I just play off the TV screen and whatever the, my laptop screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. You know, the performance has been mixed on this to date, but yeah, no, I'm kind of interested in this, so we'll see.
My game.
I mean, it'd be great. It should be great.
Valheim announced that they're going to be on Xbox next year, and they said you'll be able to play with your Steam version, which I thought was interesting.
Right.
I'm not sure how that works.
Yeah, that might be the kind of game where that could make some sense. I mean, there's been some controversy in the Call of Duty world with cross-platform play, especially with PC to console, because PC gamers have inherent superiority.
Well, in Valheim, you're not head-to-head. You know, you're fighting non-player characters.
Yep.
You're not fighting other Valheim people, so.
Yeah, I was going to say earlier, like, Call of Duty might be tough because of just how frenetic it is.
It's head-to-head.
Call of Duty single player would be great, probably, over streaming, right? That'd be fine.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to try it. That's good.
This is so good, really, for Microsoft. I feel like for the platform and for their business, they're going to make so much money on this Game Pass. It's going to be, you know, this is what Apple did.
Yeah. No, I know. You look at the usage so far, and I think the figure is like 10 million people subscribe. You're like, 10 million, it's not that much. But you know what? Actually, this is quickly heading into no-brainer territory for gamers. It's really interesting how they've expanded it. This could be good. We'll see what happens. We'll see. I'm very eager to try this.
Okay, so that's what would have been Microsoft's E3 and Bethesda's E3 announcements.
Right.
But that's not all.
There's more. So as everyone knows, Apple and Google are involved in various antitrust issues all around the planet. And God, I couldn't be happier about that. And the UK Competition and Markets Authority, which is their regulatory body, came up with an incredible 356-page report about how terrible Apple is. It's the best thing I've ever read. It's awesome. I strongly recommend it to anybody. Google also bad, but honestly, this was very clearly directed at Apple. Apple gets called out individually so much. There's so much to it. But my favorite part, the most interesting part, was the rationale for Apple not allowing Microsoft to bring Xbox Cloud Gaming, that thing we were just talking about, to the iPhone and the iPad. This happened almost 2 years ago. You might recall, we'll go back in time, but three-ish years ago, Microsoft started testing this thing, which was then called Project xCloud. Started with Android, and then later on, I think in early 2020, I guess, or whatever, it doesn't matter what the time frame was, but at some point they brought it to the iPhone. But the iPhone version only had one game. It wasn't a selection of games. You could only stream one game. And Microsoft eventually came out and said, yeah, like, Apple is really restricting the number of people we can test on this thing through their, I think they call it Test Flight app, and they're not letting us stream more than one game at a time. Like, we can't put more than one game in the library, and we can't stream games from a console like we can on Android. Like, they're not letting us do anything. And, you know, we're going to work with them. We're going to get through it and everything. And then months went by, nothing happened. And then all of a sudden, that preview app expired. It was late 2020. And then a month later, Microsoft came out and said, yeah, actually, Apple just said no to us. They're not going to let us do this. They want us to publish every game in Xbox Game Cloud Gaming individually to the App Store, which is not the, and they're like, but guys, there are music and video streaming services. Why can't there be game streaming services? Apple came out with a new version of their App Store policies that specifically spelled out that they were not going to allow this. Games have to use in-app purchases to unlock new features and functionality was the language Apple used. And it was like, what? What are you talking about? These are cloud stream games. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Netflix doesn't create a new app for every movie and TV show they make. Why would Microsoft have to do this? Microsoft lashed out at Apple at the time. It was actually kind of incredible. And they basically said, well, we're not doing, you know, we're going to figure out some other way to get this on Apple's platform. And the way they figured out eventually, it took 6 months or some period of time, but they eventually started doing it through the web browser on Apple's devices. So you can do like Safari-based streaming of Xbox Cloud Gaming. It's not, you know, it's not perfect, but whatever. They also did a nice little middle finger thing, which I thought was beautiful, fairly recently when they brought Fortnite, which is banned on the iPhone and iPad because of Epic, also having a similar legal argument with them over this exact issue. They brought Fortnite back to the iPhone and iPad for free through Xbox Cloud Gaming, the first time any game title was offered for free to anybody through Microsoft service. They're going to be doing more of that. In fact, that was also part of this past week's announcements. So back to this report, the UK Competition and Markets Authority looked at a bunch of different things with both of these platform makers and specifically their app stores. And the Microsoft thing came up. And this is actually really interesting to me. I surmised at the time, or I guessed, was Apple had just come out with something called Apple Arcade, and they didn't want anything on their platform competing with that because it was a brand new service, et cetera, et cetera. So they didn't say anything about that. I still think that might have something to do with it. But according to the UK, game streaming services will undermine Apple's broader services push. And the biggest part of Apple's services today is the App Store. And the biggest part of the App Store, and I mean like over 50% of it, is in-app purchases and games. And that's like job one. Like this is why Apple won't come down on that 30% fee for the biggest players, which would include Microsoft or Netflix or Amazon or whoever, like the big guys, where they make all of their revenues, by the way, from in-app service or in-app fees or whatever. So that's the first thing. Like they've got this new services business. They don't want anything to screw with it. But the big one, and this one was actually based on internal Apple emails, is they don't want anything that undercuts the iPhone's advantage in hardware. Apple sells premium devices that offer the best performance, have the best GPUs, and it's all about on-device everything. If you bring in a service that can stream games that are console quality to a phone that it doesn't matter how powerful that phone is, this thing will run just as well on a crappy Android device as it does on a $1,000 iPhone, you've just undercut the thing that is responsible for 68% of Apple's revenues.
Very interesting.
And yeah, Craig Federighi has an email where he explains that cloud streaming apps of any kind make little sense for Apple, given our strength of providing high-performance local compute, and that is counter to our overall customer value proposition. Basically, even though it doesn't make any sense from the outside, Apple's hardware revenue from iPhone sales was an influencing factor, this is the UK.
Of course it is.
Yes. To restrict cloud gaming on OS.
Of course.
That's why they did it.
Of course they did.
That is classic antitrust language and restraint of trade. It's classic.
Yeah.
And we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens. But I have a lot of people, every time I publish anything about anything antitrust related, everyone's like, oh, nothing's going to happen to these companies. You know, they're never going to change anything. It's like, you know, I disagree. I think these things are chipping away. And
did you see, you know, we're John see Oliver's Sunday show was all about big tech monopolies and why.
No, I did not.
You should watch it. Yeah, but I didn't.
He does a great job of explaining how these things work.
He's good. I think in this case he was off base on, in fact, a few of the things. Well, okay. I think in general,
it is our industry, I guess, right?
Yeah, you know, so we
like
know
he talks about like like, you know, black diamonds in Africa. We're like, yeah, he nailed it. And he's like tech and shit. Yeah, not so much.
There's some nuances he missed and so forth. But the general thrust is that, you know, breaking up monopolies is what it takes to spur innovation. And as long as AT&T was sitting on the phone lines, you were never going to get, you know, answering machines, modems, and the internet. And you know, and so, and I think it's a good point. It's well taken. And as long as Google, Apple, Microsoft, and Facebook are sitting on tech, you're not going to get any competitors.
That's right. It's all about protecting what you have. Yeah. You know. Yep.
So, and I don't think that's wrong. I mean, there were some in some of the details. I think he missed some of the nuance. Yeah. In fact, this is really even with what you just said. Apple's justification, Apple's rationalization is we want to give our users the best experience. And because they
that argument has been pulled apart so effectively.
Well, not necessarily.
You read this.
Don't confuse that with what they want.
Right.
We're not saying we're going to give the users what they want. We want to give them the best experience. And we don't think, given that they have a supercomputer in their pocket, that running off of somebody else's servers is the best experience. I could make that argument.
I actually disagree with that 100%. No, because
here comes a tug of war, baby.
No, by the way, like I said, the UK report has to do with a lot more than what I just said. A lot more. This is just one tiny little issue. I pulled this out because of the Microsoft thing. They actually effectively pull apart every single argument that Apple makes about the quality and the reliability and the privacy and the security and all that stuff. The things Apple says publicly are nonsense. Like one of the things they talked about was this, we lowered our fees from 30% to 15% for 90-something percent of developers. Absolutely true. That impacted their revenues from the App Store by 0.05%.
It was the developers under a million in revenue. Right. So it
made no difference to any. Most developers are having lower fees, which are now only 5 to 6 times what MasterCard charges. but the vast majority of revenues come from a handful of really huge developers who, by the way, are all paying 30%. And that's why Amazon just pulled their stores out of or the ability to buy directly from apps off of Android, because Google is going down the same, you know, they're enforcing that same rule. It's it's long. It's, like I said, 356 pages. This UK competition, whatever the name of the organization is, the UK Competition and Markets Authority report is astonishing. It's excellent. It is full of such clarity.
And
they literally break down every argument that both Apple and Google and their competitors make, and almost universally land on the side of Apple and Google's competitors. It's like, yeah, what these companies are saying is nonsense. Here's why. And, you know, whatever. It's very, very interesting. And to people who kind of care about this stuff and know about it, it's not surprising, but it's heartening to see an organization in a position authority finally just come out and say, yeah, this, what they're saying is nonsense.
Mm-hmm. What's great is they've got the emails to kind of really.
Yep. Oh yeah. That's
put the lie.
See, that's
to Apple's
the thing.
Story.
Once you have countries getting involved,
right?
A legal process occurs where they can start subpoenaing and getting internal information, and then you can see what's really going on. Because there's the face they present at WWDC and whatever other events, and it's all like, we're saving the world, boo! You know, and it's like, yeah, it's a little more nuanced than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Microsoft in John Oliver's report? Because nobody ever puts them in there, and
no.
I'm like, they should be in there too.
You're like the classic Coke of antitrust now, you know?
Yeah.
He didn't even mention the DOJ prosecution of Microsoft in the 90s.
Yeah.
People are just like IE. Not, I mean, I think to most people, it's ancient history, you know?
Yeah, it's fine.
I will say, in some ways, the notion that a company bundled a browser and got raked over the coals like they did sounds a little quaint today compared to what's going on with Apple and Google. And Yeah, for sure. And Apple and Google hit a much bigger market today than Microsoft did back then, blah, 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 whatever. But you know what?
Yeah.
You got to remember how crappy this company was. Like, you forget what a cancer Microsoft was in this industry and how thoroughly they destroyed competitors. And that the company that brought them, that made that U.S. antitrust thing, disappeared basically right during the trial, as they were swallowed by AOL because they couldn't compete anymore because Microsoft destroyed them, just like it destroyed WordPerfect and Lotus and whatever other companies were out. You know,
he really focused mostly, I'm looking at it on YouTube right now, on Google, Amazon, and Apple. Those were the big three.
Meta.
You know, he mentions Meta, but no, it was really mostly about Google, Microsoft, and Google, Amazon, and Apple.
I mean, the Amazon thing is almost not even tech, right? It's really about
he's talking about self dealing. Yeah, he's really talking about self dealing in a lot of this. Yeah.
Google has a rich history of, you know, preferring their own service. Well, actually, Apple does too. You know, Apple got in trouble for that in the App Store. Like, you do a search for an app, and like an Apple app would come up, and you're like, what? what the heck is this?
That's exactly what.
Oh,
he's
no, it's an
about.
Organic search result. You know, that's what happens.
Yeah. Like, no. And Chuck Schumer's daughter is a registered lobbyist for Amazon. I didn't know that. That was a fascinating revelation as well.
Huh? Interesting.
What a light, what a world, you know?
Yep.
Let's talk about the good stuff, technology.
Whew.
And mostly Call of Duty, frankly.
Thank you.
Yes.
So I've been stuck playing a years-old version of Call of Duty for years because the latest versions just don't work for me from a multiplayer perspective. There were technical issues with the original remake of Modern Warfare, if that makes sense, I think it was 2019 Modern Warfare, Black Ops, Cold War, same problem, a lot of lag, a lot of latency issues. The World War II game they came up with this past year was not great. You know, frankly, it's done very poorly in the context of Call of Duty. So they're going to turn it around this year. So Modern Warfare 2 is coming out. There'll be a new version of Warzone, lots of multiplayer modes, lots of... They're changing everything, right? So they're trying to atone for the sins of the current title, and we'll see. But I hope so, because at some point, I don't know how long I can play this. This is like a... I don't know what it is. I've been stuck doing the same thing for years now, and I really need something new, and I need it to be Call of Duty, and I need it to be good. And this game looks good. It's if you're familiar with Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, the original, this is the classic with the the scene on the ship and everything with the barrels and the crates, and they're absolutely redoing that. It was one of the classic multiplayer maps of all time. It looks beautiful. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I don't think from Activision's perspective they could replace the current game quickly enough. So I think they're trying to wipe everyone's memory of this past game. So.
Now, I don't want to stir up trouble here, but it doesn't mention PlayStation.
Oh, no. It's still PlayStation.
Okay. So the pre-order for Xbox, but it's going to be...
So the way this has shifted a little bit, you know, my Call of Duty used to be like an Xbox exclusive. Not the games weren't exclusive, but things would happen first on Xbox. Then they did a deal with Sony, and that all moved over to Sony. These days, they still have their Sony thing, but honestly, things happen day and date on both platforms. So what Activision will do is they'll release an announcement on both for both. So the announcement came from Activision. It was on the Xbox Wire blog, but there was also one on the PlayStation blog. I just covered the one from
good.
From the Microsoft side. Because, real men play on Xbox. We don't have Xbox.
Well, I agree, but Michael, our 19-year-old, plays on PlayStation 5, and he will be...
Oh, God! Sorry.
He'll be very upset. Very upset.
No, it's all happening everywhere.
It's still cross-platform. Okay.
It's on PC as well.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah.
Let's talk Microsoft 365, which is unusual given that we just did gaming. Usually that brings the show to a grinding halt, but no, there's there's more. And there's gaming news. Hooray! Mary Jo.
Although not hooray in this case, but.
Well, I think it's just about time.
Wow. Yeah, so there is a report in The Verge that Microsoft is testing casual games running in Teams. Why is a good question. I think the why from their standpoint is twofold. It's we need to try to get people to engage in other ways inside of Teams. So why not let them like play solitaire together or Wordament together and talk about it and chat about it on Teams? Or this could just be a way to try to get Teams consumer to grow because so far they've got chat out there. Like chat got pinned to the IE 11 taskbar, and you still never hear anyone saying they're using consumer.
I do
Teams.
Feel like little simple games were a thing back in the Messenger, Windows Messenger, Windows Live Messenger days. Like that sounds familiar. It's not something I ever engaged in. I got to tell you though. Hybrid homework, whatever. I want less time in Teams. I think that there's a real fatigue that comes from having to interact with people virtually, and I want less of it. I don't want meetings that are 90 minutes long.
Yeah.
I don't want meme threads where people are sending in funny GIFs and stupid little videos and look, my kid did some stupid thing at school. I feel like that is a weight that is harmful to people, and giving us more stuff to do in Teams just from that perspective, I think is bad. This is one I've already gotten. You asked, why would anyone want this? Yeah. Don't ask that on Twitter. You're going to find out why. And this is the same conversation we had earlier. I accept that there are these small times where some people need something and blah, blah, blah. This is not something that should be a mainstream activity for most people. And I feel very strongly that this is wrongheaded. But just from the perspective of, like, I care mostly about technology in this case or whatever Are we never going to run out of things to add to Teams? Is Teams a black hole that can just suck in everything now? Is that what this is? That's what it feels like, right?
It does. The other part of the Verge's report, which is kind of interesting, is they talked about Mesh for Teams or Teams for Mesh. I can't remember which way that product name goes. But, you know, the idea that you would be represented by an avatar in a virtual space inside of Teams and you could talk and dance around a campfire or maybe just play Wordament instead together in a virtual environment.
Oh, boy.
I know. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Is this just a rumor, though? This is not.
Microsoft hasn't confirmed it, but it sounds like The Verge has testing somewhere.
As soon as you hear it, it sounds it sounds so
believable.
And
that's
it totally
what's sad.
Does. Yeah. It totally sounds believable. It does not sound crazy. Microsoft thinks
crazy.
It sounds crazy, but Microsoft's dying to get more consumer business and love.
In Teams,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. 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 We'll see.
God.
Yeah.
This is, you know, so Leo had asked earlier about the gaming features in Edge and whether that could be turned off. And a lot of the things I don't like that are in Windows 11 or Teams or Edge or Office or whatever can be turned off, right? But the thing we've lost, and by the way, one of the things that I think was one of the few good things to come out of the Windows 8 era was this notion of everything comes with you, that everything you're going to sync. Mm-hmm. So when you go on a new PC, if you've spent the time to configure things a certain way, this new computer could be like that too, if that's what you want. And that's completely gone away, right? Every time I'm an outlier in this case, but I bring up new computers all the time. I install Microsoft Office. One of the first things I do is take 5 or 7 minutes to go through all the stupid little features I need to be exactly some way in Microsoft Word, and I have to do this every single time because that stuff does not sync. Never has. It never will, I don't think. The Edge things that, you know, we were talking about earlier, whatever Edge features you want or don't want, you have to do that every single time. Yeah. If there are things you don't like in Windows 11, the sync is just basically off. It's gone. You have to configure that every single time,
right.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And Teams being overloaded with new features would be a little easier to take if me signing in meant that the things I don't like and had already turned off would just be off every time.
Mm-hmm.
If I only had to turn them off once, I'd be like, okay, whatever. Yeah. Overload the thing. It doesn't matter because I'm not going to see it. You can't do that because they want you to interact with this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want you in front of it. That's how it gets usage.
Just like Focused Inbox, you knew I was going to say it. Never shuts off. Every time I reset a PC, it's back on again. I'm like, okay. I know you want me to try this, but I hate it. I don't want it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, at least we've got echo cancellation.
Right. Here's some really good features coming to Teams that people have been asking for, actually. Echo cancellation starting to roll out now to Teams users on Windows, Mac, and coming soon to mobile. This is, you know, when your speaker is too close to your mic, your audio and video... I can't talk
anymore. You got
anymore.
It. You're right. You got
speaker
it.
Speaker is too close, and you get in that loop where you can hear an echo.
Yeah.
That happens. This is going to fix that. And Microsoft says the way they fix this is using machine learning and training big data sets. They also are fixing interruptibility. Wow, not interoperability.
Interruptibility or interoperability?
Yeah. Interrupt, right? So, So when two people are talking or you're trying to talk and listen at the same time, and you know how sometimes you can't do that? Like if you're talking, you can't hear what's going on. They've figured out, again, through machine learning, they say, how to make it so that without distorting the speech pattern or anything else, that you'll still be able to hear and speak simultaneously and you won't have any interruptions. That also would be very interesting and useful. And then the whole idea of reverberation, where sometimes it sounds like your voice gets tinny and you're talking into a cave almost. Again, machine learning, the magic button, they're fixing that. They've been working with 30,000 hours of speech samples to try to perfect this and make it so that won't keep happening in Teams, starting to roll out now. All of these are not future things. They're coming now. So unlike games and Teams, this seems kind of useful and something people might want.
Huh.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's like a tinnitus simulator, you know?
Yeah.
maybe they could use machine learning to solve tinnitus. Exactly.
Mine too. I haven't in 1 year. I'm like, oh,
it's like you ever have a mosquito fly into your ear? Now imagine it never leaves. That's what tinnitus is. It's fun.
It's terrible. Fun. Yep.
Well, we all three of us have it. That's good news.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. Yeah, I thought it was the
thanks, Van Halen.
Yeah, exactly. I blame Eddie Van Halen.
I'm pretty sure it's genetic or something. But anyway,
it's like 30% of everybody. But you know, when we were younger, we all listened to music too loud. I'm sure that had something to do with it.
At least the music we had was good. At least it was like good that music. Crap they listen to now.
Yeah. Outlook Mobile, another nice feature that you just can't live without.
Yeah.
Paul?
All right, so this should cause alarm when you hear this, but they're adding an algorithmic news feed for enterprise accounts. You're like, "Wait, what?" So, you know, if you use like Facebook, for example, like has some kind of a news feed now and it's like news. It's really terrible news. It's like it makes like the things you see in widgets look, you know, high quality by comparison, but that's what it sounds like. That's actually not what this is. This is for kind of corporate news, and it's stuff that's related to what you care about or are interested or are involved in. So, yeah, you will see things like, hey, Bobby's having a birthday, or, you know, they're celebrating their whatever anniversary. There will be stuff like that. But at least it's work-related. So, I don't know who uses stuff like this. Like, in the same way that they've added a search highlights feature in the coming version of Windows 11, which is something that appears when you bring up the search box without typing, you get this stuff over on the side. It's like, hey, did you know today was Flag Day, or which was yesterday, or whatever. Like they'll have topical information. So it's like you went to search for something in particular, but now you're getting distracted by something and you go down some rabbit hole and it's like, what was I doing again? So that's a good feature to have in Windows. But this is also being added to there will be a feed now when you search. So when you go to the search interface, which is one of the tabs or whatever they call them in mobile, you'll actually see this feed below the search box. So you can find out about your coworkers and stuff and see what games they want to play in Teams because it's fun. I don't know. Or something. I don't know.
That's something.
Sounds fun.
Something like that. All right.
Yeah.
Well... Yeah. This was all mixed up for me. I don't know if I understand how this happened.
It's all over the place.
But I think it'd be a good time to take a break because I do know one thing. The back of the book is next. Mm-hmm. Yes? With some nice beer and other things. But first a word. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to talk to you about our sponsor, Collide. If you are, like us, a business that uses Slack for your internal messaging, sorry, Teams guys, but this is a Slack kind of add-on called Collide, and it's all about security. It's really a new take on endpoint management because, honestly, I think a lot of us have learned that the old school way of doing it with MDM and locking down devices and, you know, pouring crazy glue into the USB ports and all of that stuff, without considering the needs of your users or even attempting to educate them about what you're up to, is counterproductive. Collide was built by like-minded security practitioners who in the past saw just how much MDM was disrupting end users. In fact, because end users would get frustrated so badly, they'd end up using their own devices, right, to do work. And then they'd bring it into the office and, well, you know, the rest is history. In that scenario, everyone loses. Collide is different. Collide is a endpoint management solution that involves your users. I know this is hard for some IT people. Like, I don't want to involve my users. But Collide does it in a very, I think, a brilliant way. It starts with a message on their Slack inviting them to install the Collide endpoint. It says, hey, we want to secure your system. The company's just started using Collide. And here, let me walk you through installing it. It's a conversation, for one thing. And that's their first Slack message. That's the first thing they get from Collide. From there on, Collide will regularly send employees recommendations when their device is in an insecure state. Things like, you know, the screen lock, not having a password. And it tells them, you know, this is why you need this. If you leave for lunch right now and your screen lock kicks in, nothing's to stop your, you know, Larry, the guy in the other cubicle, from sending a hysterical email out on your account. You know, and that's going to embarrass everyone. Or maybe more difficult to solve are nuanced issues like when people, you know, they set up two-factor. Good. We like that. But then they download the recovery codes and they stick them at plain text in their download folders and leave them there. Not a good idea. Collide sees it. The endpoint, agent sees it, notes it, and then sends them a message saying, hey, I noted a problem. Help me out here. And because it's talking directly to your employees, it's educating them about the company's policies, how to keep their devices secure. It gives them real, tangible examples. It's not his theoretical scenarios. I think it's a brilliant idea. I want you to check it out. It works on Mac, Linux, and, of course, Windows devices. It puts end users first. It's for teams that use Slack. Endpoint management in your Slack. Get endpoint management that puts the user first. Visit Collide, KOLIDE.com/WW to learn more and activate a free 14-day trial today. No credit card required. Collide, KOLIDE.com/WW. And when you sign up for that new trial, as a way of saying thank you, a little goodie bag of Collide swag. I love it. KOLIDE.com/WW. This is a great idea. And I want you to try it out. Collide.com/WW. All right. Now we are back on track for the back of the book. We will kick things off with Paul Thurrott and a tip of the week.
We're not done with games.
Oh, damn it. What do you got?
In tandem with not E3 this week, Microsoft is having an Xbox Deals Unlock sale where you can get up to 80% off of Xbox games. And this one's kind of fun because they always do this, actually, but I always like pointing this out. You can filter the list of games by different criteria, including such things as percentage off low to high. So you can see the games that like are the biggest sales or whatever, or I should say high to low. Or price, like high to, or low to high in that case, right? So you can see the cheapest games or the ones that have like the biggest discounts. So, for example, there's a game called We Happy Few, which
good
is
game.
90% off.
I like it.
Yep. $60 normally, $6 right
now. Wow.
Metro Last Light Redux, this is kind of a classic, but again, $20 normally, $2.99 now. That one is 85% off. So definitely check through this list if you are looking for some inexpensive games. There's some good stuff here. I don't know when it's going to end. It's not going to last forever, obviously. I'm not sure what the end time is, but it is still available today. I think it started at their maybe around their Bethesda event on Sunday. So possibly for the week or something like that, but definitely check it out.
Cool.
Yeah, and then two quick app picks. Both are browsers. Firefox, or I should say Mozilla this week, released a new version of Firefox that has enabled total cookie protection. It's like total war. Total cookie protection by default. So this is their, and it's not an enhancement. It's actually a complement to the enhanced tracking protection feature that Firefox already offers. And this is a way to block trackers, obviously. That feature uses kind of a list that's maintained by Mozilla, so they have to always keep it up to date. It works pretty well. But total cookie protection actually just works on all cookies. And basically what it does is it puts them in a cookie jar. Of course it does. That's fun. And it the idea is they're trying to prevent sites from using cookies to track you around the internet.
It pretty much kills third-party cookies, which is good.
Yeah, which is what, frankly, what we're looking for.
Nothing wrong with cookies. Yeah. It's the third-party cookies we want.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Mozilla now claims that Firefox is the most private and secure major browser available across Windows and Mac. I assume the word major is to exclude Brave from that. But there you go. So, and that's good. And in sharp contrast to what Google is doing with the privacy sandbox, where they're just inventing new types of third-party cookies. So there you go. So consider that. And if you are a Vivaldi fan, you should know that after several years, I think they announced this feature like as long as 5 or 6 years ago. Their mail client is now available, so it comes with the browser. It's kind of like the old communicator thing back in the day. There's actually a calendar component that comes with that as well, and I think a feed reader.
There is.
And, yeah, it looks pretty cool.
It's become the Teams of browsers. This thing is so many features at this point.
I looked at this really quickly. I am not using it. And let me – I'm not going to bring it. It doesn't matter. But when I looked at it, it looked like it was IMAP and POP3. And it was like, seriously? Like, I think we need a native support for Outlook.com and, you know, the Microsoft account type stuff and Gmail and all that. And then I'd really like to have a nice – high quality, you know, like local email app. Like I haven't really used something like that in a long time.
Be careful because it does try to download your entire IMAP cache. It saves all the messages when you first install it. You have to make sure you tell it not to do that.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Okay, good. Also, just a random side note. This isn't in the notes, but Notion, which we're using for notes now, recently purchased a company I had not heard of called Cron. And as its name suggests, they make a calendar app.
Oh,
nice. So I think Cron was a limited private beta kind of a deal, but they're expanding, obviously. So that we'll see how that works. I don't know if it'll be a standalone app or they integrate it directly into Notion, but I just saw a headline about that and kind of quickly read it. But that's interesting.
It'd be cool if you could embed calendars in Notion.
Yeah.
They have a calendar view on the database. I use that when I travel.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, but it's not really a full calendar. I think a lot of people use Notion kind of, you know, as a to-do list and as a daily.
Yeah, it's like you're organizing your life, and it's like, well, calendar makes
sense. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Let's do an enterprise pick of the week. Enough of this gaming nonsense, Mary Jo Foley.
Sorry.
Yes, this is a very enterprise-y pick. No fun here. No balloon stores here.
Thank you.
Windows Admin Center is coming to the Azure portal. Why should you care about this? Windows Admin Center is a server management tool. And Microsoft says by bringing this to Azure, you're going to be able to granularly, is that a word, manage your Windows Server Azure IaaS virtual machines from right within the portal. So the idea is by doing this, you're not going to have to remote desktop into your virtual machines to administer them. It'll simplify your life greatly, Microsoft says. You'll get new features like enhanced view of your virtual machine usage, performance monitoring, viewing of events, and much, much more. So if you are someone who already is running Windows Server on Azure, Windows Server 2016 or higher, and those are your VMs in the public cloud, you'll be able to start testing and working with Windows Admin Center in the Azure portal now. See, no gaming here.
That was a heavy lift. Stuff. Holy cow.
That was a heavy lift.
If you had games in Teams, you might be a more
why can't we have games in Windows Admin Center, right?
Shh, don't say that out loud.
Just don't give them any ideas.
Careful.
Exactly.
Codename pick of the week.
Yes, this has been the codename pick before. It's Gibraltar. Gibraltar was the codename for a version of Windows Defender that Microsoft has been working on that protects not just your local PC, but your whole family of devices. So your Android phones, your iOS phones. It kind of gives you like a central portal kind of view into the security of all of your devices. I don't know if it was a leak or a planned, I guess it was a planned beta. When it went into beta, I actually downloaded this. I forgot I even had it on my machine. It's supposed to give you like real-time notifications about safety issues, security tips, steps that you can do to stay ahead of hackers. I don't remember seeing any of that, but I guess I had it on my machines and I had it on my phone. And the reason I know I had it was because I just got a notification this week saying the preview is about to end. So that makes me think this thing is going to launch soon. Hmm. I'm using soon in quotes, TM, the soon, the way Microsoft uses it, because we don't really know when yet. But I think it will actually happen. And I'm curious to see how they position this and price it and make it available. So keep your ears open for Gibraltar, the Windows Defender product protecting your whole family of devices.
Hmm. Okay. Huh.
Yes.
So it's software.
Yes.
But comes and it'll be on Windows. So
there's so many things that are named Defender now. Yeah, no, it's kind of hard to keep it straight. Okay. But yeah, this is something that Microsoft already has Windows Defender that you have on your Windows machine.
Right.
But this is more of a, like I keep saying, a portal experience, like something meant to show you the security status of all your devices that are connected in.
Cool.
Yeah.
How about some beer?
Yes. How about some beer? So I don't know about you guys if you've had watermelon beers. I hate them. I think they are terrible. I don't think watermelon belongs in beer. Just personal preference.
Wow. Just taking a stand right there.
Just taking a stand. But you know what is really good in beer and is similar but very surprisingly good to me is cucumber.
Huh.
So there is a beer made by a brewery in Brooklyn called Wild East. It's called Alfresco Cucumber. And they actually take a Kolsch ale. You know, Kolsch is a German-style ale that's very bright, not hoppy, kind of a summery type light beer. They condition the beer on cucumbers, like they actually let it, you know, sit on top of cucumbers. And it gives it a cucumber aroma and flavor, but not too much cucumber. So it's not just pure cucumber all the time and no beer. It's a nice mix of beer and cucumber. Very light, low ABV, 5%. I think Micah Sargent would like this beer. I know he doesn't drink a lot of beer.
Yeah,
but
I don't think he can drink beer. It has gluten in it, doesn't it?
Oh, you're right. He has the gluten issue. But if he could drink a beer, yeah. I think he would enjoy this beer.
If there were a beer Micah could drink, it would be this.
It would be like this. Yeah.
Would you garnish it with a slice of cucumber? Is that what's floating in it?
I bet you would. Like a little wedge? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's very refreshing this time of year when it starts getting hot and humid and you want something not too heavy. I still drink my IPAs, but if you want something lighter like a Kolsch, this is a nice way to drink it.
Kolsch is a lot, actually.
Yeah, Kolsch is a very nice, refreshing.
For summertime.
Yes.
Well, this is it. That's it. Summertime is coming, and but Windows Weekly is leaving. Because it's over. Our summer edition is in a week, though, so we'll be back, I promise you.
Who won the tug-of-war? Is that what happens? Do we declare a winner?
Yeah, we should. We should have, you know, just like in Formula One racing, they have the driver of the week. Let's have the tugger or the dozer of the week.
The tugger of the week.
The tugger of the week.
I think given that I admitted defeat on my
I think Mary Jo is going to always be the tugger of the week. Well done, Mary Jo.
Yep.
Congratulations.
Paul said I was right about touch on laptops. I'm just going to like revel in that moment.
We'll send you the bronze rope award.
And, thank you.
Yep. Congratulations.
Every time I hit like a little hair or something, my dog is on my screen, whatever it is, and I hit it with my finger and it does something, I think, stupid Mary Jo.
She was right. Yeah. We do Windows Weekly.
It's like a daily comeuppance.
We do Windows Weekly of a Wednesday morning around 11 a.m. Pacific. That's our time. 2 p.m. your time in the Eastern time zone. It's the Sirachi zone.
Sit down, buddy.
Sit down.
Sit down, buddy.
Sit down. Did he hurt his paw? Did he hurt his little paw?
He did. He hurt his little paw.
Oh, how did he hurt his little paw?
I don't know what he did. Probably jumping off of the cabinet, which he does
he
all the time.
He was being bad is how he heard it.
Yeah. Been bad cat. No cookie.
Yeah.
That's 2 p.m. Eastern. That is 1800 UTC on a Wednesday. If you want to stop by and watch, you can. Live.twit.tv. Actually, there's live audio as well as video streams there. If you're watching live, chat live at irc.twit.tv. Or in our fabulous Discord chat, Club Twit members get access to the Country Club chat. $7 a month. Oh, that's not all. You get ad-free versions of all the shows, the special Twit Plus feed. And a reminder, tomorrow I will be hosting with Stacey Higginbotham, Stacey's Book Club. We just finished this morning, In the Nick of Time, the new Neal Stephenson novel, Termination Shock. Lots to talk about with that. So if you're in the club, tomorrow, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, details are in the event schedule on the bulletin board up there at the main house. So you just go on up and check that out, and we'll see you then. If you're not a member of Club Twit, what? Come on. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit and sign up today. You're going to love the new show we're working on. Can't tell you much, but it's going to be good. It's going to be so good. It's one of the things that Club Toot lets us do is incubate new shows like This Week in Space, which are now is heard publicly. Let's see. After the fact, you can get on-demand versions of all the shows, advertising supported, so they're free, at twit.tv/WW for Windows Weekly. You can watch it on YouTube. There's a YouTube channel dedicated to Windows Weekly. And since we didn't play any Paddington the Bear having tea with the Queen videos today, I think we will be there. They pulled us down last week.
There's no copyright strikes.
Oh, my. Yeah.
Did they really?
Yeah. Canal Studio, which owns the rights to Paddington on Twig last week, we showed, you know, it was this great thing. Part of the Diamond Jubilee, they had the Queen having tea with Paddington. An animated Paddington. It was really cute.
Well, the best things about that is like YouTube gives you these great tools where you can kind of fight back and make your position and it'll be fine.
Yeah, right. Well, we did, and it's still down.
YouTube is so terrible. It's always like, no, they said no. They said no.
Yeah, no, like, not gonna do it. Gosh. Anyway, we didn't do that here, so I think we're good. Well, we did play that. There was a song in that. Internet Explorer Farewell. Yeah, was that a commercial song?
I miss you.
Oh, we're in deep trouble.
Yeah, you bet it was.
I guess, you know, if you think you're watching the show, you're not.
not on YouTube. I hope you saw it live, folks.
Yeah. Well, it won't be on YouTube, but it will be, you know what, the best thing? Avoid all the censorship. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app, and you'll get it automatically the minute it's available. How about that? Leave us a 5-star review. Tell the world of your love for Windows Weekly and these two right here, your head dozers, Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Thurrott is at Thurrott.com. That's his blog. Become a premium member because there's great anecdotes galore. You also, if you want his book, The Field Guide to Windows 10, soon to be 11, that'll be at leanpub.com. Mary Jo Foley's ZDNet blog is at allaboutmicrosoft.com. The dynamic duo of Windows reporting. And a hell of a team at Tug of War. Thank you, you too. And we'll see you next week on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Did you spend a lot of money on your brand new smartphone and then you look at the pictures on Facebook and Instagram and you're like, what in the world happened to that photo? Yes, you have. I know. It happens to all of us. Well, you need to check out my show, Hands-On Photography, where I'm going to walk you through simple tips and tricks that are going to help make you get the most out of your smartphone camera or your DSLR or mirrorless, whatever you have. And those shots are going to look so much better, I promise you. So make sure you're tuning in to twit.tv/hop for Hands-On Photography to find out more.